This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture.
Each week,
for more information about our classes,
one of our UCLA Mindful Teacher
Retreats offers a talk
visit
my UCLA to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being.
UCLA
Thanks for joining us. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.
60 of them I have numbered, actually. And then there are a couple of things that I rarely teach. And I thought, oh, you know what? That would be, I think, useful for me to teach those things. And I'm going to share my my screen to a PDF version of my book. Okay. And let me just close this for now. So this book is called It's Not Easy to Be Human. And, you know, its intention is to say why it's not easy to be human and what to do about it, you know. And so chapter one talks about, I mean, there's a lot. Let me just show you the let's see. Yeah, table of contents. If you go through table of content, there's a lot of lessons and content, and a lot going on. So chapter one is really talking about, this idea of suffering is pain is, many of you have heard this, pain is inevitable, suffering is an option. And then there is also in the US, I don't know how many of you are not from here, there's also this thing, concept of leasing maybe a car or a house or something with the option to purchase, you know, so these options. And so my reaction to this after doing a lot of, you know, retreats and practices and understanding what is suffering, how is it caused, and what's up to me, what can I do about it. And one time I just had this really very powerful insight that, wait, when they say suffering is optional, I'm not taking the option. No, there's no way, if I have anything to do with it, that I will allow myself to suffer. That's it. So that's the premise of chapter one, and talking about how we are born without a manual, without there being a, being programmed already as to be a human, to live like a human, to have human values and skills and all kinds of things, because I don't know, somehow nature left us to be trained as a species by our own kind, because different regions of the world have different customs, as opposed to other animals or creatures who are born with some kind of a very complete or incomplete, very definite kind of a role. Lizards have a role and they go do it. Lions have a role, they go do it. Plants and other animals and everybody else except for us have a lot of their programming already designed before they're born. So here we are. We are coded and are sort of beginning to have a brain that's gonna function for us and lead our life for us. And a lot of times what happens is we get faulty lessons and we just learn them. So chapter one talks a little bit about this. And then chapter two talks about we get stuck in life. And there are some reasons behind it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them that I kind of outlined. Traumatic experiences, of course. False interpretations. Inherent biases that our brain comes with. Now, inherent biases or biases, you could name hundreds of them, but I've really picked two major ones that everything else I believe is a subcategory of these two, which is truth bias and confirmation bias. These are the mother and father of all the biases. You know, once you come to believe something as a true thing, then You anything that's going to confirm that, you just look for that and not pay attention to anything else. So biases and this matter of being on autopilot, and then of course mind viruses, which are things that we our mind becomes ill through somebody else's ideas and somebody else's or illness of mental thinking, thinking in a way that is harmful or not harmonious or not effective can be passed around like viruses, can be contagious, right? So chapter three is what I want to cover today, which I don't cover much, in my teachings, which is there's a five stage because I was talking, originally, when I began, I wrote a five stage of human software optimization, developing ourselves optimally to function and live with optimal happiness and optimal functionality. And then I realized, okay, wait, where are we coming from that we're going there? Then I really developed these five stages of how our a software or a programming that makes us become stuck in our life. So, since I'm sharing my screen, I won't be able to see any messages, but I just saw somebody had a message there. If it's something that I need to pay attention to, please unmute yourself and tell me. Otherwise, I will jump to chapter three. What do you think? That's chapter two. Okay, so chapter three. Let me see. I'm just gonna see if somebody had something important to say. You have to. Okay, all right. Well, good to have you. So maybe I. Let's see. Would it be helpful if I put a link to my book on in the chat for people who have to leave early? That might be helpful. Just so you know where to get it from. And in the book, there is a questionnaire at the back of the book, that self-assessment questionnaire that you could use. So that have that for now. Also, there is a podcast I did recently that talks about these two chapters. Let me see if I can put that out also. Let's see, share this video just so you know. If you want to know more about these two chapters, there is a podcast on my YouTube channel just for people who are leaving. Okay. All right. So going back to the to this thing. And I'm going to leave a few minutes for Q&A. So if you like to, hold your questions, we could cover them after I give. So in my observation, in my understanding, my own personal work and development, working and with thousands of people, teaching, guiding, mentoring, seeing private clients, presenting, speaking, I mean, you name it, thousands and thousands and thousands of kind of hours and experience of knowing the mind. Myself also, I've gone to at least, well, I think this Thanksgiving retreat, it was 10-day silent retreat with monastics, not just a easy peasy one, really difficult one. I think this will be my 19th one. So 19 th times 185 hours of working in with your mind, with your emotions, with your inner understanding yourself, understanding others, the nature of life, nature of things that show up, how energy works and all that. So I think if I could get a postdoctoral of something, I would have got it with that, with those that experience. So what I'm saying is that this method and models are credible. They're not just put together, without thoughtfulness. So the stage one from the birth, I explain in this chapter that actually there is a There is, okay, let's look at this one. When you're born, when a baby is born, an infant is born, from day one, they keep receiving data, information through their, their senses. Hence, I'm calling this SMAID, like the stage one is your senses, from touch, from sight, from sound, from their own internal, the brain tells them you're hungry, you must get food right now, you need this, you need that, you need to cry, you need to alert people that who are taking care of you. And so the brain and it begins to have some kind of information about what is this life about? What am I supposed, what's going on here? It's not even who am I or what am I? Am I human? Am I not? Not even that. Just accumulating some information about life. And so in stage one, there is this consciousness of senses, sense consciousness through eight senses. Eight is the number that Dr. Daniel Siegel has kind of introduced the frame of reference. That we know the five senses are your sound, hearing, tasting, touching, what else, sight, and there's always the fifth one that I forget. So the five senses, and then there is the six, sense number six, not intuition, but your mental activities, your thoughts, your imaginations, the videos, the desires, the think, all the mental stuff. Number seven is your internal experience. Like you, if you have a sensation of itch, you're the only one who knows it. Other people cannot see it. You have feelings and emotions. It's your internal experience so that you sense it from inside. There you get an alert, and there are feelings and emotions that come. And then number eight is the environment. So you get information through environment. So stage one is that we're just getting bombarded with all kinds of data, the newborn is. And then it begins, she or he or they begin to receive perception forms, receive information about what is this? This is a sound, this is a cat, this is a doll, this is mommy, this is water, this is, you start learning stuff. And interpretation begins. And then because we don't get the full picture sometimes of what's going on and what everything is, the brain begins to fill in the gap, begins to assume and complete the picture. So it knows what to do because the brain is a predictive machine. It needs to know what's happening, what is going to happen so that it could take care of that and put us on autopilot. And so this idea of I, me, mine begins to form in that stage. And then there's a stage three that as we do things more regularly or experience things more regularly with people or conditions around us, we adopt them. They become our way of seeing life, they become our way of thinking and being and feeling. And our brain again makes these automatic for us. They become our habits. We adapt them, they become our habits. And then as we produce, these become more and more of the same, experiences, the same way and the same concept or context. They become our personality, they become our default. The default, D is for default mechanism, and kind of like this is who we are. And not so, not, I didn't really look at the age groups. I did not associate age groups. Maybe in the future I might do that. But that wasn't the problem because I'm talking about how we become stuck as an adult. Right. So stage four is our default way of just being, criticizing oneself or others, or needing this or that, or being finicky about food, or being, irritable fast, or okay. So, and then as we become set in our ways, and there is no opportunity, or we don't take the opportunity to change or develop or recode our faulty codes, what happens is we become engulfed in being stuck in such a, whatever way of thinking and feeling and being we've been, and we kind of become stuck in it. And one of the things that we become stuck in is not understanding or ignoring laws of nature. Laws of nature. Look, recently I've been saying the saying that I've been thinking of writing an article about. One of the things is nobody is not going to not die. I've been thinking about the grammar and stuff. Nobody's not going to not die. This is my saying recently to my students. This is a law of nature. It's not personal. It has nothing to do with our wishes and desires and the way we want to, we want to be alive longer. We want to be, but it doesn't matter, right? So what a lot of these lessons that I later on in chapters, I believe from 10 forward, I bring lessons that talk about in this program that we became stuck in is because it's missing some key life lessons, life intelligence, like not life lessons, but the intelligence, the way the life, nature of life works. We're missing some of those. Some of these things we learned are faulty. They were wrong to begin with, or they are not applicable all the time. Like, we become like, for example, things that come into through religion, let's say doctrines or rigidity, we become rigid, rigidity about, oh, this is the principle and this is the way it is, and that's the best principle. It might have worked, it might be important in some cases, but it may not work all the time, and we're not able in this stuck model, we're not able to be open and see, investigate. We're not capable. We didn't learn. So a lot of this model is based on learned nurture model. Genetic stuff, of course, are there too, but my role in my profession is human development. So obviously I focusing on genes and stuff is not my duty or my focus. My focus is what can I develop? How can I help people re decode themselves, recode themselves, and optimize their program? Okay. So in this model, it means that there are some things missing, some things are faulty, and we get stuck in living life that is full of discomfort, worry, anxiety, fear, not just lacking peacefulness, not being able to maintain sense of equanimity when some tough things happen. And so with this, of course, I have everything explained in this chapter. And then I believe at the end of the book, I want to take you there to show you, let's see, is it 3, 4? The PDF has different, oh, PDF has different numbers than the, let's say 300, than the book. So, by the way, the last chapter 21 is about healing your wounds. But here, this, so there is an assessment here that I tried before this session for you guys to recreate this, put it in a poll or a quiz or somewhere that you could take it with me here. Just kind of experience it. I couldn't really figure it out. So I thought maybe if you like to go with this, we can read and you give yourself a number where you are with these things, if you like to do that. I can't see anybody, so I'm assuming we're just going with it. Yes. So if you like, then I'll give you the answer key at the bottom. So number one, just think about usually, normally, when I feel anxious, worried, sad, or angry, I get caught up in what others have done to make me feel that way. It's like, when you're uncomfortable, you're thinking, this is why this other person did something, this other person or these conditions in life. It's not true, but it's about being caught up and just being stuck in it. It's about being stuck, remember. So is it never? Put a zero next to that. Is it sometimes? Put a value of three. Is it often? Put a value of six. Is it always? Put a value of nine. Because we want to just see how stuck. So do that for a second. And then if you want to go for the next ones on your own, go for it. I'll just maybe read. The next one is when someone offers to help me, I refuse or ignore the offer, and later I feel no one cares. Have you ever experienced that? Like, no, I don't need anything. No, I don't want anything. No, I'm okay. No, this and that. And then sometimes you're left with, feeling like nobody cares. So, does that happen to you? Never, never ever happens to you. Sometimes, often, or always. Put a number next to it for yourself. Number three, when others don't agree with me, I argue or resist seeing their view. So you may not even know that you may be doing that, But if you find yourself in constant conflict or argument with somebody, and you think you're right, and you have very good reasons that you're right, right? Do you ever think that maybe I listen and see what their point of view is? So if the answer is no, I don't, how often is it? Is it never? I never listen to somebody else's view, when you get into an argument. Sometimes I don't listen, sometimes I listen, sometimes I argue or resist. So sometimes I argue, resist, or often I resist or argue, or always I argue and resist. If anybody is not clear about this, just jump in and ask me something, but briefly because there isn't much time. So number four, I don't like conflict and avoid it at any cost. Are you one to head into a conversation or you just don't want to deal with it, you avoid it. And the criterias are I never, I don't like conflict and avoid it at any cost. I never have this condition, sometimes, often, or always. Number five, I feel I don't get enough love. I feel lonely. Is it never, sometimes, often, or always? So you put the numbers so you can at the end count, add them up. Number six, I believe I am the way I am and will not change. They have to accept me the way I am. That's it. Is it never, sometimes, often, or always? Put a number next to that. And then number seven, when others wrong me, I react harshly or stop speaking with them or show them how it feels. To show them how it feels. They just don't get it. Okay, I'll just ignore you. Or I'll do the same thing to you so you get it. Do you never do this? Sometimes do it, often do it, always do it. So I'm gonna scroll this up, but remember the number scale. Number eight, I prefer to pretend I'm doing great than to show that I need support or help. Do you do this? Never, is zero. Sometimes it's three, often is six, and no, wait. Sometimes, yeah, and always is nine. Okay, so two more things. No, three. Number nine is I yearn for or fantasize about someone doing something fantastic for me. You know? Just really, really wanting somebody to do something really good for you. Is it never, sometimes, often, or always? And number 10, no matter how much I try or do, I don't feel I'm good enough. Is it zero, never, sometimes three, often six, or always nine? So now, if you have these numbers, maybe you can count them, count the numbers, and the scale is here. If you get 0 to 25, it's not too stuck. You're a little stuck, but not too problematic. If the number you add up total is 26 to 50, it's stuck in several ways. So then you look into which ways am I stuck in and work on that. If it's 51 to 75, really stuck in major ways. And if it's 67, I mean 76 to 99, severely stuck in multiple ways. So this is a, you know, test that at the end of the book you can take and kind of gauge where you are. You may be pleased that, oh, you're not that stuck, but you have to really think about it, because authenticity with oneself is a really helpful good thing. Is everybody okay if I stop sharing this so we can have a conversation? I'm gonna stop sharing. Okay. All right. So I think I'm gonna stop here. We got about 12 minutes. This is just about before we get, and then chapter four of the book is about the hero's journey, which, you know, supposedly you figured out, oh, this is difficult. I need to jump and head into changing my life. And then from there, the book sets out to other aspects of the, you know, optimization. Any questions or discussion or comment or anything about what I presented?
I want to make a comment.
Go ahead, yes.
I wanted to thank you for these reminders, and about how it's important to take care of ourselves and how it's not important to think that we are super important. And we need to remind ourselves that we are exchangeable, but we only have us for ourselves. So we need to take care of ourselves. So thank you for these reminders.
Yeah, that's a beautiful, yes, a statement and summation. Look, I always remind people, myself, until that moment of last moment of your breath, who's going to be with you for sure? Yeah, your lover, your ch children, your father, you know, it's not guaranteed, but we will be there. With ourselves, you will be there. So you better be kind to yourself. Really practice to be kind to yourself, because those moments, sometimes those moments are not easy. People have tubes in their, you know, mouth, in their nose. They can't talk, they can't express, they can't, and they go. And what's happening with them? What are they thinking about? What are they feeling? You know, if they're able to be peaceful with themselves and love themselves. We, not them, it's us. Each one of us. It's not them, it's us. We need to be practiced to be peaceful and kind to ourselves so that we can two things, benefit from it and not burden others. You know? Just beautiful, like what you said. If we can take care of ourselves, we can be less burden on other people and society. So think about your practices, think about what you're developing in yourself, and think about here's a practice you could do. Think about what's going well. So this is kind of similar to a gratitude practice, but slightly different. I want to think you to think of it as an action moving thing rather than just the presence of something that's positive. What is going well in some area of your life? I have a model that has 11 areas and other things, but just keep it simple. Any area of your life, what's going well, and what is one positive action you can do about it? And we are not talking about solving a problem. We're talking about doing a positive action because of the benefit it will have. Because the intuitive or the normal thing is to run around hooked on problems and trying to solve them. But forget about that. Look at what's going well and what is a positive thing, action, or beneficial action you can do. Because positive thinking is not reliable to produce positive outcomes, because sometimes some negative thinking comes in and that positive thinking will do nothing. But positive action is not reliant on positive thinking. You can be upset, you can be angry, you can be judgmental, you can be hateful, but somewhere inside you know there is an action you can do that is beneficial and not harmful, right? That is really, really a very good practice to pick up beneficial acts instead of just thinking positively. Yeah. Excellent. So you feel love that your family has for you? Perfect. Excellent. What is one thing that you could do that's beneficial? Go ahead, Ellen.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. I don't know why, but I can't quite grasp you saying think of something that's going well and then maybe a positive action.
Yes. So pick something. Let's say you may
Yeah,
think
example
about.
good.
Okay, good. So you may think about, let's say, your health. Pick a criteria in your life, my health, let's say. And then think about, okay, what are the details, subcategories of health? Nutrition, movement, let's say, doctor visits, sleep, right? Think about four things about your health that are important factors. And then see my exercise is to find five things that are going well in each category. It may be difficult at first, but if you push yourself, you'll see. You know, I have to eat healthy. Five things that are going well in this. Ugh, I can't find five things. I could find three things. Fine, it's okay. Find things that are going well instead of looking for what's missing. And what's the problem? I need to do this. I need to do that. I gotta do more of this. I want you to re this is a retraining of the brain so we can have better outcomes. It's towards our fulfillment and happiness rather than accomplishing good health, right? So what's going well that you can Really think about it. Don't settle with just whatever shows up, easily shows up. What is a positive thing I can do or a beneficial thing I can do? Not necessarily to solve a problem, but to do that positive beneficial act for the benefit of it. And it may make sense. And when you're doing it, you're still going to think about, oh, I got to do more of this. I got to do more of that. I got to get back on my checkup with this. And okay. Instead of that, you say, oh, these things are going well. Wow, I could do this other thing too. You see what I mean? It's a slightly different way of looking at it and a slightly different way of responsibility, becoming able to respond. Because words like responsibility, accountability, in them, they have the ability to respond, the ability to account for. If you don't have the ability to account for a person, they can't be accountable, no matter how much you would like them to. If they cannot be able to respond effectively and properly to something that is in front of them, the role, something, they cannot be responsible. Do you understand? It's really difficult, for us to like to get that being effective is a learned thing. Of course, there are talents. Some people have innate ways of this is so natural to me to do it this way, to do it that way. Yes. But also, so this is a way of look at what's going well and what is a positive thing you can do, a beneficial act you can do. Let's say in the context of family love, family, support. That's going well. What is a beneficial action I can do for the benefit of it, right? And hence we become more and more responsible in our lives to live well and enjoy and benefit from our actions. Okay. So good. Do you have a follow-up question? No. Okay. All right. Well, you know where to find me. I'll just write my name down, Dr. Manish, and don't worry about the doctorness of it, but Manish Mutaki. Just pick me up. You'll find me in places. And I'm going to have a retreat at the end of this month, a day and a half of a retreat, and Saturday 29 and Sunday the 30th. Saturday is from 1 to 5. Half a day. Both of them are both Zoom and in person in West Hills. And Sundays from 9 a.m. to 5, both of them LA time. So if you're not on my on our email list, I don't know, just find me, go to my web to our perfect nonprofit perfectlyhere.org. And if you like, put yourself on the email list so that you get these notifications as well. Okay. And I also do private sessions for individuals, couples, executives, anybody who's interested, you could always reach out to me as well. Okay. Wishing you well. I hope you enjoyed and benefited. Have a good night.